Not yet, not.
We're live.
Good evening, everyone. I'd like to call the study session of the University City City Council meeting to order at 5:30 on July the 10th. Before you, you have the agenda for the public session, which begins at 6:30. Are there any changes to the agenda for this evening's meeting? Mr. Rose.
Mayor, I would recommend moving item K2 to the first item up under the city manager's report, L1.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else? Hearing nothing else. Mr. Rose.
Honorable Mayor and Council members, for several months, the Planning Commission, along with staff and our consultants, have been working to update our comprehensive plan. You received one update of the activities regarding the plan, and tonight I'd ask that you receive your second update regarding the plan and ask any questions that you might have.
And you'll need to push the button in the bottom center, and then green light will come on. There you go.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Good evening. My name is Sarah Kelly. I'm with Planning Next. We are the community planning consulting firm that has been honored to work closely with Plan Commission and staff over the past number of months on the comprehensive plan process. This evening, we'd like to give you an update on our work. We're at a very exciting moment in our process where we're about to launch our second round of public engagement and then to move forward with starting to draft the plan document. We have a number of things that we want to do this evening, and we most importantly, I'm trying to advance the slide, but I don't. I'll keep going. the agenda slide is not of critical importance. We are about to launch our second round of public engagement and then move on to drafting the plan document. So tonight is a chance for us to give a few updates, but most importantly, to hear some thoughts from some of you, if you would like to share them, thoughts or questions or comments. The things we'd like to do this evening, we want to start by giving you a big picture summary of some of the guiding ideas that have emerged as critically important to this planning work. Peggy Hawley is going to share some of that information, and then I have a few things to share as well. We then want to move into some of what we've heard from the public through our first round of public engagement, and also from some of you, because I've had a chance to speak with many of you in the past 4 to 6 weeks. And then finally, most importantly, Chuck Gaskin from the Plan Commission is going to share some of the key recommendations that have bubbled to the top as being particularly important to this planning process. These are the recommendations that we especially want to hear from the public on in the upcoming weeks. So we want to give you the chance to think about them, hear about them as well. And then at the very end, we'll talk about some next steps and where we're going to go from here for the process. So I'm going to turn it over to Peggy to start and share a few thoughts, and then the rest of us will speak as well. Thank you.
Good evening. As most of you know, I had the honor of chairing the city's plan commission. This has been a magnificent journey and certainly a phenomenal learning experience. We the plan commission, and would everybody from the plan commission who's present identify yourselves, please? All right, so we actually have a quorum here. Everyone from the Plan Commission has been involved in this since we began the visioning process back in early 2022. So we have been at this for a year and a half, and we have heard a lot from our community. The first thing that we hear, as we heard from the visioning during the visioning process, is that our community is very proud of our community. Our citizens are enthusiastic. They love living here. But we also heard from our community during this process that our history has left us as a community with two issues, significant issues that need to be addressed in this plan. The first is historic discriminatory practices in housing and real estate. All right, that has, University City is home to just over 3 miles of the Del Mar Divide. And the legacy of this history shows up within the city with significant differences in our demographics as we move from north to south. And so those historic discriminatory practices have created significant barriers to equity of mobility within University City. And so what we've heard from our community is that we need to, in this plan, begin to repair the damage done by that history. Second, flooding from the River De Pere and Engelholm Creek. That directly impacts the residents who live in that vicinity. And over the decades, the city has permitted development, both residential and commercial, in those areas. And there are two unintended consequences. One, people are closer to the water, and they're closer to flats, areas that are subject to flash flooding. But what also happened is that we've increased impermeable surfaces. All of those roofs, all of those driveways, all of those parking lots are no longer land that is able to absorb some of the surge that happens in those flash flooding events. And so those, that sponge of open land is no longer available to absorb overflow. Properties along these waterways, when we look at the 2023 St. Louis County assessment data, says those properties are lower assessed values, meaning that those least able to afford to deal with flood damage are most likely to have it. So what you will hear when we talk about goals and objectives, some of those will have impact for both of those areas. Others may be specific to one or the other. Those are not the only areas that the plan intends to address, but those are the two big issues that we have heard consistently from our community.
So with that as a foundation, what we're really trying to do through this comprehensive plan is frame it in terms of opportunities for the city. And we've shared with you, these are a couple of maps that illustrate what Peggy was discussing. What we're really trying to do is frame up the comprehensive plan as providing opportunities to address some of these challenges and others in the city. We've shared a two-page document that tries to frame up what we see as the core opportunities for this plan. So I'm not gonna go spend a lot of time with all of these, but really it's about using the plan as an opportunity to improve quality of life of residents in the city. Using the comprehensive plan as an opportunity to address the unequal access that people have had to different neighborhoods in the city and to provide housing choices. Using the comprehensive plan as an opportunity to address the impacts of segregation and provide greater freedom of movement between neighborhoods. Using the comprehensive plan as an opportunity to share a vision for the physical environment of these flood-prone areas. Using the comprehensive plan as an opportunity to make it easier and safer for people to move through the city, even if they're not traveling by car. Using the comprehensive plan as an opportunity to improve access to retail services and amenities. Using it as an opportunity to commit to a long-term strategy for parks and open spaces. Using it as an opportunity to simply make space for everyone and making sure that everyone feels valued. Using it as an opportunity to find a mutually beneficial and equitable relationship with Washington University. Using it as an opportunity to build a framework to coordinate with schools and strengthen our community to make youth a central and top priority. And using it as an opportunity to recommit to transparency and cooperation in the city's government. These are the foundational ideas that have developed for the plan, that the specific actions that Chuck will talk about are built upon these ideas. We have not developed these ideas in a vacuum. We've worked really hard to go out to the public. Some of you have assisted with this effort. We appreciate that and given us great ideas for how we can make sure that everyone who has wanted to will have a choice by the end of this process to participate. Doesn't mean everybody will, but we're trying to be loud and everywhere and just make sure that people know about what we're doing. We've had more than 500 people participate to date, and we're building upon that process over this month and next month. We've had in-person workshops, online activities, distributed paper surveys, had focus groups. We've been out at pop-up events, and we've tried to bring all of that together and synthesize what we've heard so far. We've had really good representation from the city. There is an age demographic group, the sort of younger folks between 25 and 34 that we're going to be targeting more in this next round of engagement. That's where we've been a little bit low, but we've asked, we've done exit questionnaires, and we've asked basic demographic information, where people live, and we're really happy with the representation we've had through our process. And there's details on that. There's a whole summary online on our website if you're interested. We have made sure that we've utilized the networks and organizations that exist in the community and leveraged those to get the word out. Most of the goals and objectives that we presented in our first round of public engagement were really well received. We got some specific comments, and we've tried to take those into account as we've moved forward with drafting more detailed ideas. In general, the vision, the high level ideas that we put forward, people have also been very responsive to, although people have been very frank with us that they don't always see the city, and I don't mean city government, but just the opportunities in the city in general, as always living up to the vision that we have put forth. So this plan, again, is a chance to think about how we can better realize that vision. Again, more details about this online. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this evening, but I think the main point is we have a lot of momentum. We've had a lot of good participation. We feel really good about where we are, and we're going to keep spreading the word in the month, 2 months to come. I've also had the chance to speak with many of you, some of you a couple of times now, which has been extremely helpful, share some of our thinking. We've talked about a few topics in particular, most recently in some of our conversations, flood-prone areas, housing vacancy, and mixed-use areas, to name a few. I'm not going to go through all these bullets one by one, but you all have really helped us to shape some of these concepts. When it comes to flood-prone areas, for example, we've heard loud and clear that you want the city to be proactive in addressing these areas, thinking about discouraging certain types of development, thinking about introducing open space, thinking about ways to address the fact that the needs of people that are in the flood-prone areas vary depending on where you are. There are some folks in this city that are not that are a lower income, and it's going to be harder for them if they are going to at some point move out of flood prone areas. So we need to look at the other side of the coin. We need to look at affordable housing in the city, and we need to think about how we can make housing options available as part of our thinking about flooding in the flood prone areas. We need to collaborate with MSD and others, and we need to also think about this as an opportunity for community building, so that when people are thinking about the future of the flood prone areas, they don't just see something that's being dictated by us, the consultants, or you as city government, but they have a part in shaping what these areas are really going to be. When it comes to housing vacancy, another big topic, we heard from you that you think we should start where there's momentum already and think about good examples in the city where good housing options are being created and try to emulate those. We've also heard that you want us to focus on home ownership and owner occupancy, that investor-owned properties can be a real challenge for the city, and this plan should directly address that. Coordination with the Third Ward Housing and Third Ward Revitalization Task Force is also key. And finally, as we've talked about mixed-use areas, we've heard a lot from you about the fact that this idea of activity nodes, where you can concentrate development and concentrate different types of amenities and services, is really critical. But there are some parts of the city that aren't as well served by these nodes, particularly north of Olive, so that Olive Boulevard is really a chance to provide that same type of activity. And we need to make really good connections between that part of the city and Olive and make foster improvements. Smaller low-cost gestures when it comes to improving pedestrian and bicycle access should be pursued. There are some things that we want to recommend in this plan that start to get at that. We know we can't change people's driving patterns and preferences in a major way overnight, but there are some small incremental things we can do to make it easier for people to get around if they're not in a car. We've heard a lot about the loop, the fact that there are some things that are just going to happen and in some ways take care of themselves, but there are some strategic actions that the city can take as well. Finally, there have been some great ideas that I think you all have shared that reflect some of what we've heard from the public about differentiating some of the different areas of the city, whether that be through signage or branding or other ways of really showcasing the distinctions. So that's a lot, but I just wanted to give you a flavor for some of what we think we've heard from all of you. I'm sure you'll tell us in the Q&A if we're not capturing some of that right, and we welcome those thoughts. But with that, I want to go ahead and turn it over to Chuck so he can get down to some of the nitty-gritty of some of the specific recommendations that we're starting to develop that we'd like your input on. Thanks.
Okay, so before I get into this, I think there's two really important pieces to think about when you're interpreting these comments. They're multidimensional action items. Some of them complement one another. Other ones, it is an action item and there's a cost associated with it, or it creates another problem. And there is another action item that's designed to offset a problem that we may create. So for example, think about moving people out of flood prone areas. You have to figure out where you're going to put them. We need specific recommendations that provide housing for these people so that they have a place to move where they want to be. So we have offsetting action items. There's also ones that we have them grouped in like goal A right now. They may also apply to some of these other goals. We're still working through sorting out the best way to organize these things, the best way to try to communicate all these specific goals to the public, because there is a lot here. So all I ask you to do when we think about these goals, try to get through them all and then really step back and see, okay, yeah, I like this one. I wasn't happy about this one, but now I can kind of see how these things all start to fit together. That's ultimately what makes this a comprehensive plan. And it also makes it why it's taken us so long to try to pull all this together and get it to a place where we can even wrap our heads around. So I'm going to do my best to try to hit the high level notes. But that being said, I expect there to be some confusion and a lot of questions. We'll do our best to try to answer them, but please keep those things coming as we go forward here. Okay, so goal A is preserve and enhance great places. So this is really talking about just the built environment in the University City. It is unmatched in many ways across the region. And we want to try to figure out ways to preserve a lot of the character that we already have, but figure out how to modernize it and use it for contemporary purposes. So some of this has to do with straightforward, some of the places that community new members identified in UCity that they like the best are non-conforming in our current zoning code. So we can't actually add new places like these within University City. So that's a challenge that we have. We also have a lot of other areas where there's some non-conforming issues that we can address. So updating the zoning code to match the plan ultimately becomes one of the biggest parts to this. Otherwise, we have a plan and then zoning code that runs in contrast to it. The other piece that's come up with respect to housing is discussions about a form-based zoning code. So this is about this idea that we can think about how we want buildings to look and how we want them to feel, but we can be a little bit more flexible as to how they're used. So think about retirees or young professionals. They may live in very similar buildings, but they have a very different use. One may be an over 55 community. One might be a place for young professionals. That's where some of this zone built use comes in, particularly where we have old buildings that were designed for one purpose and now we have to potentially repurpose them. A lot of what you're going to see under this is how we take this built environment and make it useful for today. Prioritizing the use of vacant parcels and having the city take a proactive management use in this. There's a lot of different aspects to this. I've just outlined a few of them here. Land clearance authority, redevelopment agencies, a mechanism that allows adjacent homeowners to possibly buy vacant properties and expand their lot sizes to make them more useful. Again, getting into some of these stormwater issues. And then promoting green use and strategies. This one's been tricky because as we've met with people in the Parks Commission, they've talked about maintenance is difficult. So we really have to be creative in finding the right ways to add green space in a way that we can actually maintain it and make it vibrant, not just a wooded area, for example. So that's what a lot of these goals have to do with. I'm gonna go relatively fast. And then if y'all have questions at the end, I'm happy to do my best to answer them, but I might punt to Peggy if she has better answers. advanced shared prosperity. This exactly gets to some of the issues that we're talking about with closing this Del Mar divide. I don't expect that over a 15-year period, we can drastically reshape the city, but this is really about taking the right steps to move us in the right direction. And what we know when we look at the maps of University City is there's certain places that have access to great amenities, great public transit, but they're sometimes hard to get to and they're not accessible to everybody. So this is about taking some of these areas, for example, along Olive Boulevard, and make it more pedestrian friendly, promoting business districts in certain areas that can be marketed, and partnering with the agencies that already exist, the business groups that already exist, to make sure that we're supporting them in their efforts, and that our policies are transparent enough that they can work through these. So for example, the last thing on here is about tax abatement and TIF. And this is a place that I've been focusing on my time as we go through the comprehensive plan, we have these long-term goals of what we want to achieve, and making sure that our tax policies and land use policies provide incentives for people to help achieve those longer term goals that we're looking for. So are these new developments looking to advance prosperity, make it accessible to everybody in the community? If so, then we want to promote that development. If it's helping mitigate some of the flood risks, we want to have tax policies that promote that type of development. So it's about kind of setting these policies up in a way that promotes these goals that are already set up in the plan. Connecting community. This one comes in two forms, and you'll start to see this as we go through the plan. It has to do with not just getting people together physically and locating them in different locations, which is a big part of these gathering places, but also having social networks and social connections that can bridge the community together and help close some of these gaps that we know are constructed just based on space and proximity of where people live. So this has to do with identifying areas that are currently unsafe to get to without a car that could potentially serve as great gathering places. The Centennial Greenway is one that continually comes up when people look at the maps and say they love the walkways that we already have. We know that we have big parts of this floodplain that are hard to manage, ways that we can potentially use that to move people throughout our community from east to west or north to south is another opportunity that's been identified in the community. The Olive Boulevard pedestrian bike safety projects, I see some heads nodding, so I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time there. And then this last one is really about taking advantage of what we have in University City, which is proximity to both Washington University, UMSL. We have a school district that is trying to get more engaged in the community and finding ways to work with community churches and other organizations to bring these things together to share resources so that we're not duplicating efforts over and over again. So this is where, again, talking about not just physical connection, but also social and cultural connections across the community. Goal D is leveraging assets. So this is again about taking some of these historical assets that we have and promoting them, but not only promoting them, but also getting to the true history and development of how these things came about, modernizing some of our historic buildings, taking some of the other areas such as our parks master plan and making sure that it's strategically designed to match the comprehensive plan. So if we see inequities in our community in different places, that this is also happening in parks. And this is something that's shown up, I think, pretty much by many of the students and high school kids and young kids that we talk to. They say like, these parks are great. These areas are great. We want to see broader investment in some of these areas to make them more accessible for the entire community. Again, this gets to gathering places as well. And then celebrating the history and the diversity in ways that I think we're just starting to really truly understand, but we wanna see more of it. And that's something that continue to come out when we talk to people around the community. I think Peggy touched on it a little bit about the historic segregation that's happened around University City, and people don't want to hide it. We want to have these conversations, and we want to show what our history looks like and how we're trying to make it better. Improving livability is goal E, and this gets really, I think, to the fundamentals of what we know University City is deep down, which is it is a suburban community, and we have a lot of great neighborhoods. And they really are the building block for many people in the region. People work in University City, but they also work elsewhere. But this is really where many, many people call home. And so what this focuses on is what we've called neighborhood nodes. So if any of you have seen these maps, these are what we call kind of like mixed use, kind of compact, limited commercial districts that are kind of spread out throughout the city. I'm trying to think of a good example, like North and South in Del Mar is probably one that will come to mind. First one that comes to my mind. But taking these opportunities to really expand on neighborhood nodes as a place where you can see more development and a gathering place again for people throughout the neighborhood. In Olive Boulevard, it's much more difficult as we go into the third ward, but really thinking about how we can use Olive Boulevard as a neighborhood node in many places. When we overlay the flood maps, as you'll see, it's very difficult to try to come up with a continuous development strategy all the way along the boulevard because of some of the flood risks. So really starting to think about how do we add pockets of neighborhood nodes on Olive Boulevard where people can gather in similar ways they do throughout other parts of the University City. Low impact development, Peggy already touched upon this a little bit, so I'm gonna skip over some of these things, although I would say they're incredibly important. Is again mitigating flood risk and low impact development. This gets to some of the issues we talk about oftentimes in the Planning Commission about parking, and how big a parking lots do we need if they have to have impermeable surfaces and so on and so forth. And goal F is improve collaboration. And this is realizing in a lot of ways that we don't live in a vacuum. We're one municipality among many. We have a lot of great strategic partners throughout the region. And there's some things that we can do as a community on our own, and there's some things that we need to work with others to do. And trying to figure out what neighboring communities are doing, where we can find complementarities and strengthen those connections, particularly along our borders to the north and to the south. And then be more deliberate with our partnerships with Washington University in particular. And I think as we've been going through this plan, one of the things that has come to light is absent their land use decisions, their long-term vision about what they view their student body and their community to look like is very much consistent with our view of how our community views University City as a diverse and vibrant place. And so I think there are a lot of common areas that we can look for mutual beneficial developments and investments, particularly along the loop. And then goal F is about audit. Oh, geez, I hate that word. My wife's an auditor, so I never like to see that. Audit of internal city communications. This came from the fact that we get comments from many of the people through our focus groups that, and even as we're trying to distribute this comprehensive plan, that there's no easy way to get in touch with everybody, and everyone has different forms in which they want to receive things. Pat over here prints everything out, and I have everything on my computer to be one example. But really have a full understanding of what the best and most effective ways are to engage with the community. And then as we've met with different boards and commissions and presenting the comprehensive plan, I think what we've learned through this process is that there's a desire to have some foresight and not always be reactionary as things come to us. And as we have this plan coming together, it's an opportunity for us all to really think about what's the role of the Traffic Commission, what's the role of Parks Commission in really making this plan come to life. And so that's this last part of F is really how do we structure things to get maximum city community involvement to move this plan forward in that recommendation. So what's going to happen next, I think Mary has handouts for you all. It's going to have, as you can see on mine here, maybe the pink highlighted ones are the ones that I covered. They'll slightly be in a different order, but there are going to be some additional recommendations and action items that go along with the pink ones that I covered. So you'll get that at the end of this meeting to look over. But with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you all have. And don't shy away. You're not gonna hurt my feelings in any way. So I think we've got a couple minutes. I think we'll only need about 5 minutes for next steps. So
any questions? Mr. Clay.
Thank you, Mayor Crowe. Thank you for the presentation. A couple of things. One of them is just a note, maybe an element that might give some greater clarity to the property value of single family homes. I think also a price per square foot delineation is instructive because, you know, some might say, well, an 800 square foot house is, you know, going to be worth less than a 3,500 square foot house. That's just, you know, that's just math. But I think where the point is really made is when we look at the price per square foot.
Are you talking about the mapping?
Yeah, the first map here.
So there's, I think we have like three or four maps that basically show the same picture. If you plot it by household income, you get essentially a map that looks very similar to the way that one looks. Okay. Price per square foot would be another way to get that. So we're going to have kind of a spectrum of ideas to basically to convey the same point that, you know, there are these pretty stark differences across the community.
So, okay. Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at the map that was presented here. Yeah,
absolutely. Gotcha.
So if you were to, I guess, present this again, I don't know what the format of your next update will be. That could be helpful if you're just talking about property values. Understand income. There are other demographic elements that I think get at the same point. In terms of the composition of those citizens that participated in the first round of the process, do you have a breakdown by ward?
So it's representative of all the wards based on the population.
We really got to use the mic. We've got folks watching.
Yeah, so it's representative. I would say broadly representative of the ward breakdown and across income breakdown and age breakdowns. Where we're missing is that one age group, that 25 to 34 group. That's where the biggest gap is. The rest of them are fairly representative, plus or minus a percentage point on a sample of, you know, 500 is pretty good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mr. Smotherson.
Thank you, Mayor Crowe. I have two parts. I have two questions that I just wanted to ask, and that is in looking through this packet and trying to understand it, where would you find the interpretation of Olive being the future commercial retail of this city? And also, where would I find us continuing to promote large and small developments on Olive? Because I think that's an important factor in our future. And I don't necessarily see that. And so that's what I'm asking, where would I find that in this presentation or your interpretation of what you've put together?
So the first thing you'll see in, I think it's in this packet, if it's not, it's already online, which is going to be the character and land use map. And what you'll see on that is in the western quarter of Olive is designated a commercial activity district. So that's going to be the first part. That's more like your big box retail along the highway type stuff.
Right.
And then as you move along Olive Boulevard, that's where these activity nodes are going to be showing up. And that's going to be more your large and small businesses are going to be showing up in those.
Yeah, I understand that. That's probably 170 in Olive up to McKnight and Woodson.
Yes.
But one of the things you got to understand is that we have another large area that is between McKnight and Woodson and 82nd Street. That is a large area that needs to be developed. And this isn't indicating any of that need and or future, if you understand what I'm saying.
Absolutely. Completely understand. Oh, yeah. Okay. So one of the things that we are working through is tying this comprehensive plan to the economic development strategy the University City has. So we're in the process of making sure that these things tie out. So in no way is this supposed to replace that economic development strategy. It's going to incorporate it. And we're going to make there'll be explicit references to pages and recommendations in that economic development strategy. But when you look at the land use map, you'll start to see kind of where these specific places are pulling out. Now, if you think one's missing, that's the kind of information we still need to know.
Sure. And then the last thing, and I'll be done, and that is what I think it's really important in our development and future is how we connect a golf course that's literally almost less than a half block away from Olive, and how do we connect that to development on Olive?
Don't have an answer for you, but that's a very good point. I think it's starting to show up on the map, but I think we can explore it some more.
Other questions? In the meantime, may I ask, I have a couple myself, and that would be, I'm not sure if they're numbered here, I don't know if they're, it says, while some of the loop's development is out of the city's control, some strategic actions can be taken. Can you pop me two or three, or is that not appropriate for this presentation?
You know, we can. So for example, parking is always a challenging one. Currently, the way that our zoning code is structured is each building has certain parking requirements. We could modify that to have like shared parking requirements, remove minimum parking requirements in some areas, consider city development of areas for parking structures. That those are kind of the easiest ones that come to the top of mind. Gateways or entryways into the city is another one that we've talked about. As to promote University City. Surprisingly, in some of our conversations with the public, people don't even know where our city boundaries are. They don't know where University City starts, where the city ends. So promoting, you know, that this is the community and here's what the community has to offer, those are some of the other things that would show up in there.
Yeah, I think the use of limit has always been a confusing issue for yep. many people in the loop in particular. But even before my next question, I apologize. I should have said this before my first question. To all of you who are on the Planning Commission, I've been on council a really long time, and I have never seen a Planning Commission that has put in the hours upon hours that all of you have put in, not just in this plan, but in all these development projects throughout our city. So, and I know my colleagues agree unanimously on this one. You guys are doing an incredible job. I mean, the lifting that you have done through this process and all those development issues is amazing. So it would be remiss of me not to just simply say thank you for your efforts. Thank you very much. And with that, I want to go just to the next question, which is only because, again, I've been around for a long time. You know, Olive being walkable is not what the state of Missouri wants. And it's they want traffic to flow and they want it to flow fast. And so I'm always trying to figure out how this exactly works. Now, I get if we're going to talk about nodes, walkability, maybe in nodes of some sort. But otherwise, that's a little bit of a hard partnership because I'm just thinking these things are just kind of going to hit right at each other. But we've never had a level of interaction with the state on anything about walkability that comes back with anything other than this is a major thoroughfare. It is our road and it is designed to get people in and out.
Yeah. So I'll add two things to that. I think one, we're starting to make some progress in understanding what can and cannot be done. And I credit staff for doing a lot of that legwork and just going through the documentations. The other piece to this gets back to one of our earlier slides, which is University City and the St. Louis metropolitan area in general was a built environment for a lot more people than we have now. When we're putting this plan together and it said right away, it's how do we take the land that we have now and make it desirable for the population that we have now? And that's where the original design of Olive Boulevard, as you decide, was a major thoroughfare for a lot of people coming and going. We know there's not that many people coming and going anymore. So we can start to use that to say, we're not trying to bring in another 30,000 people and double the population of U City. We want to make this a place that the people who are already here can live and enjoy and have that right built environment. So that's, I think, the way that we have to kind of think about this in the long term.
I think I agree with you, except for is the traffic, are we talking about population or traffic flow on Olive?
So the overall, the University City's was built for a population of like 60,000 people over the years.
But the traffic flow on Olive, I don't think is necessarily.
But we know kind of which corridors are their higher traffic flow. We have the flood maps and those things to show that like this is not an area that we want to develop to have cars coming through because they're going to flood out. So that's kind of how we have to pull these two things together. What's that? Oh yeah, we're running out of time, so.
I believe Mr. McMahon had.
Yeah, just briefly, I understand the issue regarding the flooding, and I'm not trying to move it in any direction, other than we need to take proactive measures, as you noted. I'm assuming, obviously, with Peggy's husband being on the stormwater task, you've probably had some communication with those folks.
Yeah.
In that regard.
Yeah, so we presented the draft plan, not to this detail yet, with all of the boards and commissions, I'm happy to say. So they've seen earlier plans. They're awaiting action items. We'll be meeting with them now from July until August, getting their feedback on the specific ones. We're going to try to flag what they're looking for.
And I get the idea of not encouraging development in the floodplains, not necessarily in the floodplains, but use the term flood prone areas. So I'm assuming that there's the data that would differentiate levels of prone,
yep,
so to speak, so that certain areas may be handled a different way than other areas. Some, it might be, you're just not going to build here. Yeah. Especially if we're doing buyouts and we can't because we got federal money for it, and that use is going to be dictated by that. That makes a lot of sense. But given that, I think the studies indicate that I read that in New City, we have so much hard surfaces already. Are we really basically just saying we're waiting for someone to ask for a permit and then tell them no? Or how does that work? Because we're already, what we're trying to do is remove that material, but are we saying you can't develop here, or there's way, are we investigating ways that you can develop, but it works? Because I can see issues where you've got folks who own property and they're in certain level of flood susceptibility, and then that seems to be changing daily, given our climate issues. They own the property. They want to do something new. They want to make it to a higher, better use. What are we saying to those folks in this, the big issue to them?
So we have a couple of flood maps. They've overlaid. They don't match one another. Our 500-year flood map doesn't even match up with where we actually have flooding. So we have those layers, which kind of determine the different susceptibility, as you could call. And then we're starting to work through what you could, let's say, a menu of possibilities of how different properties can be mitigated. And then we can tie that back into like tax policy, for example, and say, okay, this is what we want to achieve. And here's the incentives in line to get the partnership because there's positive benefits for the entire community. That's another way to go about it. And then it may be in certain areas that it's, yes, this intersection or this parcel or this block is too problematic and it's not cost effective. And so there may be some of that, but on a comprehensive plan level, it's really about saying, here's the big picture, here's the menu of options for you all to consider, for us all to consider, and say, okay, this is a good path forward that we all understand and how we want to achieve it. And then it's going to be a lot of what you described as what's the best for each place.
Thank you. And I just, yeah, that's what, for me, when I hear this, I start to tend to go towards the code and what's it really going to look like. And I think I have to take my brain and back up a step to keep out of that discussion too early, because yeah, that's a later discussion that will be had after these plans get more developed. So I appreciate your answer. That made a lot of sense. And I wanted to reflect what Mayor Crowe said about your efforts. Jeff will back everybody up on this since he's the liaison. You guys make our jobs easier because you do such good work.
Thanks.
And you know, my short time on council, I really think you guys are kind of setting a standard for the Planning Commission, because you guys have had lots on your plate and done really good work. So thank you.
Other questions? Hearing none, what is the next step? And is there a next step, yep, in the presentation?
That's what I'm going to get. It's one slide here, okay, two slides. So round two engagement is really to kind of take what we got from the visioning process from round one. Now that we have more details, which is what everybody's continuous wants to see, we'll be able to put those out to the public and really test them, make sure that the words that we're using are hitting the right meanings with the public, get input from the public so that then we can go back through, modify this character and land use map, and move forward. So that's really the goal. The way it's going to happen is outlined right here. So we're going to do an in-person open house on July 19th, and that's going to be a drop-in event. We have virtual open houses that people can sign up for. We try to get times that vary throughout the day. There's online paper surveys. There's going to be a roadshow display set up at Centennial Commons and one at the library. And then we'll have various pop-up events going on throughout the city at different gatherings that we know are already taking place. So I know, like, when my kids go back to school, there's a big back to school night. So I'll be there and somebody else will hopefully be there helping me out to go over this with different families. So that's the broad plan for engagement here over the next next couple of weeks or month or so. So we're gonna be really, really busy. And I think that's where we're at. So round two engagement, refine the action items, refine the land use map. So Councilman Smothers, when we think about the golf course, this is where we want to think about the land use map and look at those kind of things. And then update you all again, and then start really preparing this draft plan with some of these bigger details. And then the hard work begins right after that.
Any other questions of our guests this evening? Hearing none. To Sarah, Chuck, and to Peggy, thank you very much. Thank you to all of you for what you've done, and we look forward to working with you as we move forward in this process. We will start the public session in 15 minutes.